Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Late last week, it was a shocker when the San Antonio Express News published a new news column about a private conversation that District 9 City Council member Elisa Chan had with her staff about the then proposed anti-discrimination ordinance. The conversation was secretly recorded and shows Chan making homophobic comments and voicing her opposition to the ordinance based on her dislike of homosexuals. She calls them disgusting and that homosexuals should not be allowed to adopt children.
And by the way, this is politically correct. I don't think homosexual people should do adoption. They should be banned by adoption. You're going to confuse those kids. Mm-hmm. They should be banned. If you wanted to choose that lifestyle, we don't want to discriminate you, but you shouldn't affect
the
young people. How more terrible? Do we actually allow them to adopt? I think we do.
Yes. Yeah. In the United States? Yes.
No, I don't think so, no. In France you do, but...
For the record, same-sex couples can legally adopt children here in the United States and in Texas, and studies have shown that children are not negatively impacted by having same-sex parents. There have been calls for Chan to resign, and there have been also some voices of support for her. Today she released a statement saying, "My comments from the staff meeting on May 21st were and are my personal opinions and thoughts as guaranteed to me by the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It is unfortunate that a former member of my District 9 council team betrayed the trust of my staff members in me. I will fight. I will always fight for our freedom of speech, especially in a private setting." Chan says that she will hold a press conference later this week to address this issue. We did talk to her, invited her to join us on air to talk about the recording and to start a healing process for the city about the incident. She decided not to come on the air, but the invitation remains open if she decides to call in. We welcome her. But we asked the question to our listeners, was it wrong for a staff member to record that conversation? It was a secret conversation. It was a private conversation. It was recorded in secret. Well, to help us figure out how this happens in the media and what the ethics are involved, we've got Jane Kirtley. She joins us to talk about this. She's a professor of media ethics and law at the School of Journalism at the University of Minnesota. And welcome to The Source, Professor Kirtley.
Thanks so much.
And our number to call if you want to join the conversation, 614-8980, 614-8980. If you got a question or a comment, you could also email them to thesource@tpr.org. So, Professor Kirtley, let me ask you, so it seemed like this is happening a lot more, these conversations being recorded and then leaked to the media. Is that just me or is it happening more?
No, it is happening more, and there's a simple explanation for at least part of it, which is that it's easier to do it now. Almost everybody has some kind of an electronic device that makes it possible for them to record audio, video, take photographs using very small devices that are not readily detectable. There's a reason that in certain situations, like if you were to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, for example, you have to check your cell phone at the door. They won't let you in with it. And if you were caught, with it, you'd be tossed out because it's just so easy to make those kinds of recordings. So technologically, it's become very simple. As to why it's happening more with the staff of various elected officials and so forth, that's probably a question to ask of political scientists about what's happening in terms of the loyalty of staff, whistleblowing, all of those kinds of things. In some respects, I suppose, we could almost equate it to the whole Edward Snowden situation. My own belief is that I think younger people are thinking these days that it's more appropriate to videotape or audiotape or photograph things that in the past would have been regarded as confidential, either political strategy sessions or business meetings and so forth, and sharing them with the world. So maybe it's an extension of their general use of social media. I obviously can only speculate on this particular situation in San Antonio, but this has all the earmarks of somebody saying this is a whistleblowing thing. The public needs to know what this particular councilwoman is suggesting.
Yeah, so it's interesting that these when these conversations are released, they're just like a shockwave people are fascinated by them because we know that politicians aren't being completely honest with us. And then when we get to listen in on their secret inside backroom conversations, we feel like we're finally getting to truth.
I think that's right. You know, the incident that happened earlier this year involving Senator McConnell in Kentucky with his comments about Ashley Judd, same thing, I think. We all, I think, have at least some degree of skepticism, if not cynicism, about our politicians saying one thing in public and saying something else among their advisors or in their strategy sessions. But you're right, there's almost a voyeuristic sense of here I'm going to get to see the real person, whether it's McConnell or whether it's Mitt Romney or whether it's Elisa Chan. And I think in one respect, I have a limited amount of sympathy for the people that would say, you know, politicians have to be able to talk strategy with their close confidants without fear of it being publicized. But I think it's unrealistic these days for anybody to have an expectation that those kinds of conversations would never be revealed. And, of course, with a recording, it becomes much harder to deny it or spin it.
Yeah, then you begin to say it was taken out of context or it was edited, all sorts of outs that people now use when something like this pops up. So when they say it's taken out of context or it's been edited, what are they saying?
Well, of course, sometimes I suppose it is taken out of context and edited. I think, you know, a lot of us probably remember James O'Keefe and his infiltration of Acorn and some other operations a few years ago.
Planned Parenthood and NPR.
Exactly. And I think that in some instances it appears that some of the material was either staged or taken out of context or conducted as sort of a sting operation. In other cases, of course, it's exactly what transpired there. And that's the hardest thing for journalists, I think, who are the recipient of these tapes, because it's so difficult, one, to verify their accuracy, and then, two, to be certain that they are not taken out of context.
So with the James O'Keefe, he went to these Acorn Clinic and Planned Parenthood clinics, and he went to and they staged a sting with the NPR fundraisers. They were pretending to be someone that they were not. And that has not been very good for the press in the past when they've tried to do action like that. It has backfired on them completely, especially with something like the Food Lion investigation that ABC did many, many years ago. And they were actually held to be liable for the secret videotaping that they did for that.
They ultimately were, although the amount of damages was reduced drastically from the original jury award, which was in the millions, down to about $2. But yes, technically they were, and interestingly, it wasn't for the hidden camera as such, because in the state that they were working in at that time, it was perfectly legal to use the hidden camera. It had to do with the way they got the job and that they had misrepresented their intent, they'd misrepresented their qualifications, if there are qualifications for working in a deli, that was actually the basis for the judgment against them.
Right. So we're talking about the practice of recording conversations in secret, getting a politician on tape saying things that they don't want everyone else to hear. Then that tape gets out into the public, to the media. It creates a firestorm. What does this mean for journalism ethics? We want to hear from you. Our phone systems are having a little bit of a hiccup. We hope to get them online in just a minute. So give us a call at 614-8980, 614-8980. And what do you think about the council member Chan's secret recording? We'll be right back. And welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the ethics of recording secret conversations in secret. You pull out your iPhone, you hit the record, you kind of put it to the side of the table, and somebody says something they're not supposed to say. That person's a politician. You email that to a columnist at the local paper, and pretty soon people in town are talking. That's what happened to city council person Elisa Chan, and she said some things about the homosexuals, and she is now people are calling for her resignation. This is not going away. She's going to have a press conference later this week. So let me ask you, Professor Kirtley of the Journalism School at the University of Minnesota. People in the press have got to be really careful about these recordings that they get that they did not record. What do they have to look out for?
Well, it's an incredibly risky operation, especially if you get a tape recording or some kind of recording that's essentially dropped over the transom to you and you don't even know who the person is that's giving it to you. I think journalists have a big ethical responsibility not to promulgate false things, and that includes faked tape recordings or other kinds of recordings or faked photographs. We've had a lot of controversy here in Minnesota about some photographs involving a politician in the last couple of months, and there's a huge question about whether they're really what they purport to be. And it doesn't seem to me that it's an ethical answer to say, well, there's a controversy about this, and as journalists, we have to cover it. Yes, I mean, we do have to cover controversy, but we have to be accurate. And so to the extent that you're relying upon somebody else's representation about what something purports to be, you have to be really sure that that source is one that you can trust. And ideally, you should be able to tell your readers or your listeners or your viewers who that source is so that they, too, can judge it. Because, for example, if a tape like this or a recording like this comes from somebody who's in the political opposition of the individual involved, then you have to think at least a little bit about whether there was any motivation to fake it or to edit it carefully or to present it in such a way that it does distort what transpired there. On the other hand, I would just add that one of the comments that Ms. Chan made about her First Amendment rights, certainly nobody's questioning that she has First Amendment rights to express her opinion and express her viewpoints. And some of the U.S. Supreme Court justices would even say she has a First Amendment right to privacy in her communications. But having said that, just because you have a right to express yourself doesn't mean that there are no consequences when you express yourself, and I think that's what she's observing now, the consequences among probably those who support as well as do not support her point of view. That's what she's going to have to deal with now.
Okay, let's go to the phones. The phone line is 614-8980. Let's get Tom on the air. Tom, welcome to The Source.
Mr. Martin Davies, I'd like to thank you for taking my call.
Go right ahead.
My question is really a simple one. I'm wondering why the staff at NPR just doesn't get on with it and change the name to Liberal Public Radio and be done with it, because that's really what it is. That's how everything or most things on the network are spun, and I wish it weren't so, but...
Well, Liberal Public Radio doesn't... Liberal starts with an L. It would have to be LPR. So NPR, you know, things like Nancy Pelosi Radio, that might work. Something like that. Does that work for you, Tom?
And no, listening to the way you spin the thing doesn't work very well for me, to be completely frank, because... it's always got a liberal twist to it.
What is the liberal, Tom? What is the liberal twist?
Well,
I mean, help me out here. I don't see it. I mean, I'm just being. I have a blind spot there. Maybe help me out. What's the liberal twist?
Yeah, the liberal twist is the whole subject is about recorded or elements that are recorded secretly and then released into the public domain and the ensuing scandals. And the three instances that are cited are the nasty Republicans that have done that, and the one instance that is not that is in the Acorn. Then what is really emphasized is the people who undertook that endeavor were purporting to be someone that they weren't. And those are there's some merit in all those points, but it's anything but one. It's anything but balanced. Everything seems to be from a liberal take, in my estimation.
Well, Tom, thank you for calling. I appreciate it, and thanks for listening. I think this time you're off base, because this is nothing to do with that. But I appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in. All right. So, well, let me ask you, Jane, since you're a professor, what do you think? Is there a liberal bias to asking whether or not there's ethics have to be considered when there's a secret recording done?
Well, I don't think that there is. I think where the bias would come in anybody looking at these stories, is if they justify it in one situation where it's revealing information about someone they disagree with and support it in a situation where it's revealing information about something that they support. To me, this is should be a neutral question. The issues, and I'm kind of echoing what the U.S. Supreme Court said a few years ago in a Supreme Court case involving intercepting the telephone conversation that involved a conversation between some union workers over some plans that they had, and it was apparently made in violation of the federal wiretap law, which prohibits intercepting telephone conversations. And what the Supreme Court said was that people do have an expectation of privacy in those communications, but number one, if the journalist who chooses to further disseminate it had nothing to do with the recording that broke the law, and number two, if it's a matter of public interest and concern, that is something that's legal to do. Now, that's a separate question from whether it's ethical to do, but I think the questions are important ones. Number one, is it a matter of public interest and concern? I think we can all imagine circumstances where a recording could be made where it really is a purely private matter and that wouldn't justify further disseminating it. Speaking for myself, I think, you know, exposing what politicians really think serves a public purpose. Some people thought it was very telling to learn what presidential candidate Romney had to say about, you know, the 47%. Others thought that it was outrageous that information was made public, but it certainly contributed to the public conversation. But I could imagine other circumstances where the information that was recorded would not be a matter of public interest. So for me, it really does turn on how important it is for the public to know. That's clearly, though, a subjective question.
And also, the whole Monica Lewinsky scandal started out with Linda Tripp secretly recording Monica Lewinsky, and that was the what she drove that. So it goes both ways. I mean, this is not.
It does absolutely go both ways, and you know, that's part of the reason that I think.
But I want to get to some callers really quick. I really appreciate.
Sure.
So let me. Walter's on the air.
Absolutely.
Walter, welcome to The Source.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say, sure, Ms. Chan is entitled to her own opinion. You know, a person may be entitled to have the opinion that people of different groups are not entitled to full civil rights, but the public is entitled to know that about you before they entrust you with the people's business. Now, that's what freedom of the press is really all about, and that's the bargain you make when you volunteer to run for public office.
All right, Walter, thank you for your call. So Walter is echoing what you're saying already, Professor Kirtley, that people have a right to hear what politicians really believe and what they say behind closed doors. Tonsi, you're on the air. Welcome to The Source.
Hello, Mr. Davies. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I'll make my question as quick as possible. Now, I don't want to condemn Ms. Chan for what she said, but it's very important that the public gets to know what she said. And if this kind of thing happens in the background and there are PR firms and everything covering her up all the time, or other politicians and publicly elected office members, what does this mean for ethics and journalism for the upcoming generation, for us students? How are we supposed to report all this kind of issues? And isn't it important that we use this kind of tool, the smartphones and, you know, recording, since it's legal? Could you please tell me a little bit about that?
All right, Tonsi, thank you very much. So Texas is a one-party state where only one person has to know that a recording is being done, but in other states it's different. Isn't that right, Professor Kirtley?
There are about a dozen other states that are either two-party or all-party consent, you know, depending upon whether you have just two people in a conversation or whether it's a conference call, as it was the case in a situation involving Mr. Boehner and another representative, McDermott, a few years ago. I think, but again, that's the legal issue. It's what the law allows you to do. And the idea there is that we're not intercepting a conversation that somebody doesn't know is being heard by another person. It's that you're making a recording of a conversation in which you're participating yourself. So that is the standard in the majority of states, but that's the legal standard. And I think journalists have to ask themselves. Again, the riskiest thing from my point of view is when you're getting a recording that's made by somebody else.
Particularly audio recordings, because you can really edit audio. I know, because this is what I do. You can edit audio a lot of different ways and make people say things that they didn't really say. And video, of course, you have it's very much more difficult because you have to worry about the cover video, which you're not going to have. So,
right.
But you got to be really careful, especially if you don't know the source. But with this story, the Express News did have that. Let's get Dimitri on the line. Dimitri, welcome to the source.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is regarding another aspect of the ethics here. Mr. Stevens, if I understand correctly, indicated he made the decision to record and distribute that recording based on the fact that rather than talking about the way the ordinance would impact the constituents in the district, they began talking about the political ramifications for Ms. Chan's future. Mr. Bazan, in his comments, talks about, or in a statement, said that he intended his comments to be purely political. Another staffer's heard on the recording talking about the implications in an upcoming primary. And I'm wondering, is it appropriate in a city hall office on city time with city staff to be conducting what appears to be a political, purely political discussion?
Dimitri, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Good comments. So, Professor, currently we're running out of time, about 30 seconds. What do you think about this?
I think that that's a great question about the proper use of government resources. I think the bottom line is nobody who's in public office should assume that their conversations are not subject to being monitored or being recorded.
I think we're going to get to the point in life where everyone's going to have to collect the cell phones in the room and put them in the drawer before we can actually, or just always say the right things, never say something stupid, you know?
Well, or at least try to be honest across the board, I guess.
All right. Well, I certainly want to thank you for joining us, Professor Kirtley. She's a professor of media ethics law at the School of Journalism at University of Minnesota. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you for tuning in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.